Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell. I'm delighted to be here with Fleur MacDonald to talk about her new book, The Missing Pieces of Us. Welcome, Fleur.
Hello, John. How are you going?
Very well. We haven't seen each other for a while.
Crimson Dawn was the last time we saw each other, so I think that's like 4 or 5 books ago.
That's such a shame, because we got to know each other on Twitter, back in 2010, 2011, around there, when we were... Booktopia was really sort of starting out on those sort of areas, and you were starting out pushing out your first few books.
Yep.
And we saw great sales from the word go. The publisher must have been very happy.
I think they're happy. It's going well.
Yeah. Now that you've sort of dominated the... I like to think of it as the literary end of the rural romance sort of area, where sort of stories about very strong women in stark situations... out there in the sticks. But this one is something new, where we're looking at a suburban situation.
Yeah, sort of very different. I just sort of felt that it was a natural progression to go across to like general women's fiction. So when I spoke to my publishers about it to begin with, I said, well, I'm either going to like to write crime or, general women's fiction. I did actually throw out there I could try erotica, but they didn't really come at that. So
well, I understand why. This is not the market there used to be.
So we decided on commercial women's fiction. Excuse my voice. Missing Pieces of Us is the outcome of that conversation.
But there's been some changes in your life. This kind of reflects the changes in your life.
Well, yes. So my marriage broke up 2.5 years ago, and I live actually on the outskirts of Esperance now. I've got 5 acres on the outskirts of Esperance. It's not big enough for me, but you know, within time, I really do hope to go back farming as well. It wasn't meant to mirror my life, I suppose, but because certainly nothing in the book is about my life. But move to suburbia type thing off the farm. But I still will write rural. Yeah, that's my bread and butter and what I like to do. And
a lot of writers are actually heading into a kind of a two-book cycle in a year. There's a lot of pressure on writers to do that. Is that something you're going to be looking at?
Yeah, I had... Sapphire Falls out in November, and The Missing Pieces of Us is out obviously tomorrow, so April, and then I've got another book coming out in November. So yes, we have sort of got on that treadmill a little bit.
But how's that feel? Because I mean, there's that sense of satisfying the need of the public, the readership, and I find that very attractive as a writer to be writing as much as you can to actually keep your... Because books don't take long to read, they take so long to write.
Oh, the amount of times people say to me, do you know how long that took me to read? I'm going, could you say 6 months? Like, that'd be great. But no, I think the two book a year thing is certainly... someone said to me the other day, you're living the dream. I said, the dream's actually pretty hard work. Doesn't mean I don't want to be living the dream. That's not what I mean at all. But it is quite intensive. Mm. And, when you've got kids and other things that go on, like I do write full time, but I'm not one for sitting still. So I'm involved in quite a lot of other things outside of writing. It's full on and you don't have too many down days.
So tell me about The Missing Pieces of Us. How did that begin, and how did you end up leaving the land and going into the suburban setting?
Yeah, okay. So I saw a TV show, and whether it was Australian Story or whatever, I can't remember, but it'd be 5 or 6 years ago, I suppose, and it was about these 4 siblings that had been out there looking for their real mum, and they couldn't, or that when they did find her, they didn't expect to find as many siblings as what they had. So there was 4 of them, and they were still looking. I'm pretty sure they were still looking for one more. This is all very vague because I can't actually remember. But the concept stuck in my mind, and so what I wanted to create was... because I write mysteries in my rural books and I love reading crime and detective stories and that, I thought, well, it might just be a bit of a natural progression to take over a mystery into, a women's fiction book. So that was what I did. Like, I've created a character that's adopted, and Lauren, and she's a teacher, and she's got a 14-year-old daughter, Skye. Lauren, being a teacher, her mantra is she's never lets her child fall through the cracks. But Sky is screaming for attention, and for some reason Lauren just can't see that. So she gets her nose out of joint a little bit when another character comes in called Tamara, who takes Sky underneath her wing. Sky's battling with, you know, the dark side of social media and bullying and so forth. And I thought that was something, you know, I've got a 17-year-old daughter, so to highlight that to, you know, mums coming up with, like, they've got kids coming up around that age, I just thought it might have been a helpful thing to do. So, yeah.
Is your daughter looking over your shoulder going, don't say that?
Oh, we had the funniest conversation. She's just going, Mum, I can't believe you've written that. Oh, my God, Mum, have you written that? I'm not going to tell my friends that you've written that. I'm not going to let any of my friends read your book. I think it's very embarrassing for her. We had some conversations where I've never seen a kid turn as red as what she did. And she goes, how do you even know this?
Yeah, I'm a writer. Writers know all. You cannot escape.
You should never look at the research, the history on my internet.
I mean, this is probably a personal question, but I mean, everyone has their own battles with raising teenagers. Was there that 14, 15, 16 period more difficult than you're facing now?
Actually, I've got to say, compared to what I was like at that age, my children are an absolute dream. My mum always used to say to me, I can't wait till you have kids. And my kids haven't turned out like I was. So.
That's what I'm the same. My parents felt the same, and because, you know, I did a few things, and you know, whatever the kids are doing these days, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
It's nowhere near.
The only thing, I guess, that really upset my two was that but when I did leave my marriage, I think Rochelle was 14, Hayden was 13, so that certainly did throw life up into the air for them, and it's taken a long time. And look, like I've talked to both of the kids, I've said, you know, there's not a manual for this, mm-hmm. and we're all going to make mistakes, which we all did, but, you know, we've got out the other side of that, and we're really close, and I love having them around.
Just while you were talking about crime earlier, and I don't want to freak you out, but Michael Connelly sat in this chair, in the chair
can
you're
I
sitting
take
in.
Can I take it home with me? Yes, I don't suppose it's any secret I'm a bit of a Michael Connelly fan.
Well, yeah.
Compatted.
It just popped in my head and I went, I remember that. So with books, you know, a book like this, the kinds of relationships and intricacies that are going on, I find when I'm dealing with these kind of things, I can get completely and utterly involved with the backstories and mm-hmm. the characters of these people and forget story. How do you manage when you fall in love with these characters or delve into their backstories to bring it all back together?
Do you know, because I've not studied the craft of writing, I just tend to write. I do a lot of things really subconsciously, and I've been talking to a couple of people about that today. A lot of things for me just happen subconsciously. I don't realise that I'm doing it. I've had people compliment me on handling things with sensitivity and blah, blah, blah. I don't even realise I've done that. All I've done is tell the story.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to answer
that
question.
So you have an automated sorter in your head. It's already happening before it's even...
And if I haven't got it sorted, the editor sorts it for me later.
And the suburban setting, is this something that that you've experienced, you know, recently? Is this the sort of, or is this something you're pulling from the past, or is this completely out of your area? You're doing what writers do and write fiction.
Yeah, probably the latter more than anything. But, you know, I spent 4 or 5 years at boarding school in a city, and I've spent plenty of times up in the city, you know, where, you know, you watch people and see how things work. And I had 10 days in one hit in Perth a couple of years ago when my son was in hospital. So, you know, like I'm no stranger to the city. I just choose not to live there. So, I pulled on knowledge as well as watching and fiction.
And the migration aspect of it, the sort of just the people coming out from England. I read something recently. There was some massive proportion of English that went to Perth as.
Yeah. Look. Would have loved to have delved into that a little bit deeper. There is some amazing stories, and I watched. So the novel Oranges and Sunshine, or the other Sunshine and Oranges, the other way around. I started to read that and I had to put it down because I just bawled everywhere. So there's some incredible stories. And there's some, you know, stories where people, I think, you know, the English, when they sent what they call the Stolen Generation out from England, you know, that was an amazing time. And that wasn't a great time. That's not what I mean. But the information and the stories that came from all of that, you know, is a wealth of stories, you know, to be able to tell. So I sort of read a bit of that, and then it didn't quite work in with what I ended up doing in the book. But yeah, it was certainly a lot of research in that, and something that I really enjoyed.
And you're obviously a big reader yourself. Are you? What are you sort of getting into at the moment? It's a good. I like talking to writers about their own reading, because it's kind of a good indicator of where things are going. There's kind of a vibration.
Yeah. Well, I haven't given up any of my crime reading. So like Michael Connelly, and everybody's still sitting alongside of my bedside table. Jane Harper's The Dry. You know, I don't probably need to say anything more about that. It's the most incredible book. I'm reading a lot more women's fiction to what I used to read. Just, you know, like getting a feel for what's out there and what I like. Because I think that's the other thing too, is I tend to like to write what I want to read. So, just reading that. I read, I'm not sure how to say her last name, but it was Rebecca Doane or Doney, and that was called The Secret That We're Keeping. I think that's what it was called. Oh, that was just the most incredible book that I'd read for a long time. It really captured my imagination.
Well, things like The Dry, what they do with publishing is that every second book someone tries to sell to me is, it's almost like The Dry. there's that kind of hope. I think that every second next author is going to do what the Dry did. Your liking of mystery and crime, will you, you know, with the success of The Dry, is there talk of, because you obviously want to write more of, in that line, and you've got the two book deal. When two book program that you've got going, will the second book be like, could you flip between monetary? Yes, you're nodding.
Yeah.
And the more straightforward crime.
Well, the funny thing is that when Sapphire Falls came out, so that was out in November, the amount of people have had write to me about that book is massive, a lot more than what I've had in previous books. But the comment that is coming through from so many people is that they love Detective Dave.
Yeah.
And I love Detective Dave. You know, like he's a pretty cool fella. Don't know what I'm going to need to do when he retires, like Harry Bosch. I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do. But I sort of have spoken to Alan and Unwin about really... And the other thing is, I don't know if I'm allowed to say it, but I'll say it anyway. The sales for Sapphire Falls were really great. So, you know, obviously that crime thing, that does make me very different from the rest of the rural lit girls. I think I would really like to focus on. So that's really the plan. I think there'll certainly be a lot more of Detective Dave around and, and do the commercial fiction as well. So just... I probably can't make it any more meatier and crime orientated than what I did with Sapphire Falls, because I don't have the knowledge, or it would take a bit more research. And when you're on that two book cycle, that time for research is quite small. Hmm. So but anyway, Detective Dave isn't going anywhere.
What do you got as a setting? That's a thing that you've got which no one else can really take away from you. That's quite unique.
Yeah.
And that's gold.
Yes.
And the, you know, I want to get the nitty gritty of the writing process. And now that you've stepped things up, you've got a probably very tight schedule, I'd imagine. How do you manage? You know, you're talking about perhaps getting back into farming the land and things like that, and you've got teenage kids around the house. How do you manage to write, and how do you go about it? You said it's kind of organic. Is that?
The... I have actually had to teach myself to sit down and write. So I'm also the secretary for the local agricultural society, and I'm involved in Rotary, and I'm a state finalist for the Rural Women's Award for this year, and all of that takes time. So I've had to learn to sit and write, and you cannot wait until you've had an idea. It's got to be treated like a business. And that's how I look at absolutely all of my writing now. Like, it is a business. And if something hasn't succeeded quite the way I want to, I make sure I go back and I look at it and I go, okay, well, was it my writing? Was it the fact, what the timing of publication? Was it lack of publicity? Blah, blah. But it's got to run well. And I guess in a way, you know, going out into commercial fiction is, again, growing a business. Mm-hmm. You know, it's putting another arm on the business.
And do you have much contact? I mean, I feel that you're on the other side of Australia and away from Alan Unwin's headquarters here in Sydney. I mean, email is there, and I suppose Skype is there to be able to communicate. But you're probably out there making decisions and then sort of throwing them around and then having to approach these Sydney-siders with them. Is there much help? Is there much sort of back and forth between you and your
Yeah, editor? Alan and Unwin are so supportive. They're so easy to work with. So we have a Skype meeting, you know, once or twice a year, but I usually come to Sydney on an off time when all we're doing is sitting down and mapping out the next 12 months and focusing on, you know, whether something needs to be changed around or we need to freshen things up or whatever. So I'm going to be back at the end of May to do just that, which, you know, it's so much easier when you're in a room and you can eyeball everybody and you know, you can see that perhaps what you've mentioned doesn't quite sit well with someone but sits really well with another person, and so we include publicity and marketing and everybody that's involved in the process. So yeah, it's good fun stuff.
And so you're out there, you're many miles from everyone here in Sydney, and you've got 25,000 words of a book. What does your day look like? Like, you're rolling. You're not currently in no idea. You're in. Is it like 3 hours in the morning, or is it you're a late night writer? Or
I love getting up early in the morning. If I'm rolling, no one better walk through my door. Because if I'm rolling and the kids walk in, or my partner walks in, or something, it's like no, sorry, there's the hand. But you know, I love getting up early. I write very well. 4 o'clock in the morning.
Excuse me.
Four.
What's four like?
Never four's been beautiful. The sunrise, John. The sunrise.
Sunrises. Ooh, that's news.
Yeah, no, that's when
so
I'm
four
till
when.
Whenever I stop. Usually the kids sort of go to school about 8, so they appear about 7, and that's when the noise sort of tends to start. And I've run out of coffee usually by then, so so it's time to stop. And then I'll see, once they go to school, I'll just see what's going on, whether I've got to take a run out to Prickle Farm for the Rotary Club because I'm their manager for the farm, what else has got to happen that day. But if there's nothing else, then I'll go back in. But I know that once I interrupt that flow, sometimes, especially if it's like an emotional scene, I find it very hard to go back and write the next day. Mm-hmm. So that's another reason I've taken on some other business interests. So if I do have that 4,000, 5,000 word flow that's emotional, where I need a bit of a break, I can not have any downtime. I just work in the afternoon on something different.
So do you, is it linear, or do you, if you have an idea of a chapter that's coming up later on,
No. I might have an idea. So in my office, I've got three massive, massive big whiteboards, and I brain dump onto them.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's really good to go back and look at ideas that I've had.
Yeah.
But I can also get to the end of the book, and there's still, you know, quite a few ideas there that I haven't used.
Yeah, and you see James Patterson writing those down on little slips, put them into his file of facts, send them aside. I'll use those later, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I've got another two novels to finish by the end of the week.
Yeah, that's it. So there's quite a file on my iPad photos that I take photos of.
Oh, yeah, of course. Brilliant.
Just leave it at that, and then I can wipe the boards off and start again.
So on a practical level, you're up at four, unbelievably. and you come to the computer, are you reading back through 10 pages to get you rolling, or are you just going straight from that last word?
Sometimes. I did come up with an idea a couple of books ago where if I finished mid-sentence, I didn't have to go back and read. I could just sort of, you know, keep going because I'll read the last sentence and go, oh, yeah, that's where I was going with that. That doesn't always work. But, yeah, but now I just, I really seem to like to get to an end of a chapter and then start afresh. When I stop, I won't finish until I finish the end of a chapter.
Amazing. It boggles the mind how many different approaches writers have to the one thing.
And that's the funny thing. There's no right or wrong. And you can go and do any amount of writer's workshops or courses or whatever, of which I've done a lot too. But you've got to do what works for you. And if it doesn't work for you, then change it until it does, because you're not going to get any words down until it works for you. So.
Thank you very much for coming in and talking to us, Fleur.
Oh, thanks, John. It's been really good to be back. You've got beautiful offices.
Yeah, I'll take on the tour soon. Fleur's new book, The Missing Pieces of Us, is available from booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.